But the idea of a partnership Sunday is not a new one and a novel idea. And the beginning of this chapter speaks of more than one, very different to ours, perhaps, but with similar themes running through. And the chapter starts with the most disorganized of them all. No prep from the admin team, no forms or cards on chairs. In fact, no one seemed to know it was Partnership Sunday, not even the apostle himself. This is the Partnership Sunday from Macedonia, which I've called a spiritual surprise. Because it is difficult to know just what Paul was looking for. He'd got a project of his own. He'd obviously told the Macedonians about. It reflected a global church because it involved brother and sister Christians back in Jerusalem. It modeled ministry because it stood by and supported the poor as those Christians faced famine. But having mentioned it, we don't know what Paul was expecting them to do about it. Bring it up at the prayer gathering, perhaps, as we'll bring what we've just spoken about to our prayer gathering on Tuesday. Maybe someone could afford to slip a coin or two, even a note or two, into his pocket on the way out. Whatever. Look at verse 5. They exceeded our expectations, he said. They gave themselves, first of all, to the Lord, and then, by the will of God, also to us. The Macedonians set the pace, not the apostle. They gave themselves to the Lord. Now, he's not speaking of their conversion here. This is more the daily surrender to God that's part of any discipleship. But they're not going to be swept along just by enthusiasm for Paul's project. And they're not going to drift into it out of dutiful support for the apostle. He says it, I suppose we'd better do it. Their first loyalty is to God. So they gave themselves first to the Lord and then by the will of God to us. Give yourself to the Lord and he connects you to the Lord's people. In fact, I can't give myself to the Lord without finding he gives me to his people. I know we live in an age of individualism and we're short of commitment to one another, but that's not the sign of discipleship. Giving themselves to Paul meant giving themselves to the cause of starving brothers and sisters, contributing to the relief fund. Now, Macedonians were not wealthy. In fact, Paul speaks of their extreme poverty. Yet it isn't just the giving, but the manner of it that astounds Paul and exceeds his expectations. I mean, did you notice, for example, back in verse 2, he speaks about overflowing joy and rich generosity. I don't know whether those are some of the feelings and actions that hit us when an offering hymn is announced. Overflowing joy, rich generosity. He says, verse 3, I testify they gave as much as they were able and even beyond their ability. I don't think he means that they ran into debt. I think it's more likely what he's saying is they just did their sums again and found ways they could save on spending and add to their giving. But if they're in extreme poverty, that's not going to be just a luxury they do without. Verse 4, he goes on, entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the Lord's people. Now, I don't know if you realize how shocking that verse is. Look, we're used to beggars, aren't we? You know, people who'll sit on the street and beg, pleading for to get cash from us. Well, here's a verse all about beggars. People pleading to give. Asking not to be overlooked, making sure that the basket comes their way. They want to join in the privilege of sharing. And that sharing word, it's the Greek word koinonia, which is usually translated fellowship, or if you like, the kind of partnership we mean by Partnership Sunday. And it hardly starts out, certainly doesn't stop at a cup of coffee together. These poverty-stricken Macedonian Christians are desperate to be in partnership with the apostle and their fellow Christians in Jerusalem. And they know you can't be a partner and hold things back from one another. Macedonia, the Partnership Sunday, it never occurred to the apostle Paul to organize. And the spiritual surprise that exceeded his wildest dreams, they gave themselves, first of all, to the Lord, and then to us. Now, this next Partnership Sunday is very different. It's in Corinth. It's what I've called a spiritual test. Now, please don't misunderstand me. The Corinthian church had been just as excited when they heard of Paul's project, just as keen to stand up and be counted, to stand alongside. Many had talked of going home and writing a check, or of how they'd bring a credit card next week. Others had started to plan a gift day. But you know how good intentions can just fade into inaction. They never got round to writing the check. They forgot to bring the card. They could never quite get organized enough to sort out a gift day. So verse 6. So we urge Titus, just as he'd earlier made a beginning, to bring also to completion this act of grace on your part. But since you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in complete earnestness, and in the love we've kindled in you, I don't know whether that was Paul's assessment of them or their assessment of themselves, but since you excel in everything, see that you also excel in this grace of giving. I'm not commanding you, but I want to test the sincerity of your love by comparing it with the earnestness of others. I want to test the sincerity of your love. For the Corinthians, when Titus put together their Partnership Sunday, it would serve as a test of their love. They talked the talk, but the Macedonians had delivered. Now, this would be their chance. And we've all been there, haven't we? We've meant to do the right thing. We've wanted to do the right thing. We've just never quite got round to doing the right thing. And, you know, we've found something else getting in the way, filling our time, seemingly more urgent. We can sympathize with them. The sting comes when Paul reads our heart. When he blames it not on our inefficiency, not on the I'm just chaotic personality we have, but on lack of love. That's why the check wasn't written, lack of love. That's why the brother and sister is still starving, lack of love. That's why the good intention evaporates, lack of love. Lack of love for famished brothers and sisters, in this case, lack of love for supporting God's will and purposes, lack of love of heart for the Lord's work. Truth is that, to be honest, in those kind of areas, we don't always mind being labelled chaotic or even incompetent, but no one wants to be thought of as heartless or lacking in love. So for the Corinthians, their Partnership Sunday will be a wake-up call. Corinth, spiritual test. The last Partnership Sunday isn't in this chapter because we're living it now. It's all souls, and it's what I've called a spiritual opportunity. This may be easily the best organized of the three Partnership Sundays, but that's its danger. And the reason we need to learn the lessons from Macedonia, the lesson of verse 5, they first gave themselves to the Lord. Yes, we will be filling in forms and a partnership card in a few minutes' time, and it is practically very helpful to do that if we're going to keep in touch with one another, because so many contact details change so quickly as people move around in London. But we mustn't reduce it to a tick box exercise, to I filled the card so I've done my bit and could relax moment. Or even, I've given some money so I played my part time. It is expressing they gave themselves first of all to the Lord and then also to us. They gave themselves first of all to the Lord and found the Lord handed us to his people. We've been called this year to the All Souls family. Which means your presence, your praying, your wisdom, your time, your energy, your serving, your finances, all that makes our discipleship comes with us. Partnership Sunday is an opportunity to make sure we're not discipleship light, as we might say. There's a rule of thumb that's been going around for a long while that says in churches 80% of the evangelism is done by 20% of the people. Not quite sure how you measure that one. They also say 80% of giving is done by 20% of the people. that's ignoring things like Jesus' story of the widow's mite and how the Lord doesn't judge just by the size of the check. But it's like saying, look, I'm happier to be a disciple here, here, and here. I just don't want to be there and there. The New Testament insists, however, that there and there are included in discipleship every bit as much as here and here and here. By the time you reach the end of these couple of chapters, 8 and 9, that speak about giving, it's described in chapter 9, verse 13, as the obedience that accompanies your confession of the gospel of Christ. It's as central as that. And more often when we don't give, aren't generous, I suspect we put it down to lack of organization, to, oh, I didn't have the cash on me. But the Bible tells me it's lack of love. It's lack of obedience to the gospel of Christ. This is not a gift day, but it's a day of opportunity to determine that 2015 marks the end of loveless, heartless, disobedient discipleship. A day to commit ourselves to the flow of these verses. I wonder if you noticed them. Back in verse 1, you see he speaks about grace given, a grace that God has given the Macedonian churches. This grace is given, and then through these few verses, it's as if you watch the life-giving serum do its work through the body until you reach verse 7, and you see at the end there he speaks about the grace of giving. Grace that reached their wallets, made our hearts generous. This isn't a gift day, but it's an opportunity to make our discipleship full-blooded. Some of those opportunities and challenges that will face all souls over the next 5 years won't cost much money to meet. It'll cost a lot of other things, but not money. Others may cost a huge sum. Actually, without increasing our income, we may find ourselves having to decide what not to do. But let me explain. The money for All Souls Ministries comes entirely from you, the living church family. There's no government funding that comes our way, apart from the 25% gift aid that taxpayers can claim. There's no denominational funding. We are net contributors, not receivers. So I can't, the wardens can't, the PCC can't thank you enough for the generosity that has remarkably sustained All Souls year after year after year. For people who are joyfully giving to ministries that will benefit others, whether they're doing it through the General Fund or the World Mission Fund. We've not said much about giving for the last 2 or 3 years, so it's time to call another generation to discover the thrill and the privilege of the grace of giving. Which is why we have put on the sheets alongside the partnership leaflet this newly done giving leaflet about giving in All Souls. It tells you all the different ways you can give, from legacies to giving by mobile phones. It's got inside it a standing order form, because that is probably the easiest, wisest, most helpful way in which we can regularly express a heart's love. You fill it in, you hand in the form, and it's done, and it happens whether you have the cash on you each week or not. I know even in a family like this, there'll be plenty who'll say, I don't have much to give. I understand that. For many, wages have been very flat, haven't they, in recent years? For students, debt is rising. But start. However small, let me let you into a secret. You'll discover giving is addictive. Once you get a taste for it, it's remarkable how it gets hold of you. You know, you might start with, okay, I'll give a fiver a week, a fiver a fortnight. You know, it's 2 Starbucks coffees missed, and you're there. Or you may want to start where the Bible starts, with the tithe, 10% of your income. It's such an easy math sum to do. But taste the addiction. This is one worth having. I just discovered the other day a way in which I could increase my standing order. And it's remarkable how good it felt to be able to be more generous. Paul longs that they excel in the grace of giving. Macedonians struggling to make ends meet themselves, but they gave, not, as one writer put it, not with the meticulous carefulness of an accountant checking figures. Forgive me, accountants. But he said, with the reckless extravagance of a lover. A great phrase, isn't it? What a prayer that grace would work that reckless extravagance in us. Well, here's the flow. You see it? Grace given in verse 1, the grace of giving in verse 7. And it is remarkable to see that grace flow marked and worked through in a life or in a community like ours. At the recent West One event, Robin Oak, a retired chief constable, told the story of his son Stephen, also a policeman, who back in 2003, but with chilling contemporary relevance, was murdered by an Al-Qaeda terrorist in Manchester. Now, the next morning at a press conference, Robin was there, and one journalist, I think knowing that he was a Christian, asked him, "Can you forgive his murderer?" And Robin said, "Yes, I'll forgive him." And he said afterwards, "I knew I could forgive him because I know how much I have been forgiven." Well, there in dramatic terms, isn't it, is grace given turning into the grace of giving. Partners are committing themselves to that direction of travel. Will you join the adventure this morning? They gave themselves first to the Lord and then also to us. So why don't we start by giving ourselves first to the Lord? Why don't we start with just a minute of silence in which we can personally do just that? It may be a minute in which there are areas you need to ask forgiveness for. It may be a minute in which there are areas you need to ask for all God's help and strength to hang in there through such times of trial. A minute in which, again, to marvel at grace given and give yourself to the Lord. Let's be still.